Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, April the 16th, and this is our State Capitol Report. Every Monday in this hour, we will review the top state government stories of the past week and preview what's likely to be making headlines in the week to come. And we always welcome your questions for our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, and our other guests, depending on what we're talking about. And what's getting a lot of attention right now and what we will talk quite a bit about this hour is all the political fallout over the firings of 8 U.S. attorneys by the U.S. Justice Department. And some are speculating whether there was political pressure on U.S. Attorney Stephen Biskupic in Milwaukee, pressure to keep his job. And some wonder whether that led to his prosecution of state worker Georgia Thompson, because it would make a Democratic governor running for re-election look bad. We'll talk about the latest development in this story with Sean Johnson and also with U.S. Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin, who will be visiting us after 7:30. Plus, we'll talk with Sean about what else the state legislature is up to. Our number to join in, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson joins us now. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
Well, before we get to Attorney Gate, for lack of a better term to that, let's talk about what else made news last week at the state capitol. I know that when we talked last week at this time, you said there's going to be a push for public financing of campaigns following the state Supreme Court race, that expensive and negative state Supreme Court race. How did that go?
Well, you had a couple Madison Democrats introduce what would be one of the more sweeping campaign finance law changes at the Capitol. It would provide for public financing using tax dollars of any state political office. And basically the way you'd qualify for it is get a certain number of $5 donations, and then you could qualify for this public funding, the idea being that everybody would be running on a more even playing field then. And then you also had a hearing on campaign finance reform this week where you heard from Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson. She spoke in favor of publicly financed judicial campaigns.
The public's perception of possible influence by campaign contributors tends to increase with the amount of money raised and spent. But the risk that the public will believe a judge is beholden to individuals or groups that contribute to his or her campaign is inherent in any non-publicly funded judicial election.
Mm-hmm. And, Wisconsin already has a system for public financing for judicial elections, and it's something that candidates have taken advantage of in the past. But the spending limits are low compared to what candidates are spending today, and the amount of public financing you get is low compared to what you saw in the last election. And so in this last election, nobody took that public funding. And Justice Abrahamson said, if you have a system of public financing that nobody takes, it's basically not effective. You also had some critics, or one critic at least, of publicly financed campaigns at this hearing. Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce's James Buchan says there's little public support for Wisconsin's existing public financing system, and that uses a $1 checkoff on people's income tax forms.
I think that there's clearly less support for it when they don't even have the option of a checkoff. When you advance the notion that we're going to take GPR tax dollars and spend them on campaigns, people find that even more repugnant than the system that we have now.
Yeah, so is this going to go anywhere this session?
You could just look at the track record for this issue, and it certainly has an uphill climb. I think the idea of 100% public financing is not going to fly with the Republican Assembly Speaker, who has said pretty strongly he doesn't think that taxpayers should be funding lawmakers' campaigns. Whether or not some scaled-back version of campaign finance law changes past the session, that's a possibility. You could see something that forces interest groups to tell you who's donating to them in the couple months before a campaign if they run ads against or for a candidate.
We're talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about what's making news at the state capitol, and we will continue after we check the weather. We'll talk about the story that seems to be dominating a lot of attention these days, that being the dismissal of 8 U.S. attorneys on the national level, and the speculation as to whether one of the U.S. attorneys in Milwaukee was on a list of attorneys being watched and how that might have influenced him. We'll talk about that after we check the weather. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 16 minutes past 7 o'clock right now on this Monday, April the 16th, and this is our State Capitol Report, talking in this half hour with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. Sean, I see here that U.S. Attorney Stephen Biskupic has issued a statement late last week, or was it over the weekend, admitting that his performance and loyalty to President Bush has been questioned. But he says it has nothing to do with his prosecution of former state worker Georgia Thompson, whose bid rigging conviction was overturned recently by an appeals court. What in the world is this list all about? There was a list that Stephen Biskupic's name was on that questioned his performance and loyalty to President Bush?
Yeah, and at this point, this is a list that one news service found out about from a congressional investigator. So, you know, it's not public to the rest of us if it's out mm-hmm. there. And so it invites speculation, obviously, when you can't see what's on this list and what its origins were. I imagine there will be some questions about it in the Senate Judiciary hearing on tomorrow. But basically, it's questioning whether Georgia Thompson, this woman who worked in Governor Jim Doyle's administration, I shouldn't say the list. Let's go back to the mm-hmm. How we got here. I mean, Georgia Thompson, this woman who worked in Governor Jim Doyle's administration, was sent to prison for allegedly rigging a contract to help a Doyle campaign donor. So when she was sent to prison, that was a big issue used against Governor Doyle on the campaign, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a week and a half ago now. It's hard to believe it's only been a week and a half, but an appeals judge basically tossed that, appeals panel tossed that and said the evidence was beyond thin. And so that's kind of how we gotten up to this point here. There was some questioning early on that this might be politically motivated. Now we know that there's a list where Stephen Biskupic was among attorneys who might have been fired.
Yeah, it is. Curiouser and curiouser. However, we also heard late last week that Democrat Attorney General in Wisconsin, Peg Lautenschlager, supported Biskupic's action, saying she, I guess, was consulted and thought that the prosecution of Georgia Thompson was the way to go. And then didn't Biskupic also say that Dane County District Attorney Brian Blanchard was also consulted on this case? So he's saying, I went after Georgia Thompson because the evidence led me to go after Georgia Thompson. It was warranted.
Right. Mm. And he's pointing out two Democrats who worked with him on this, and that Lautenschlager and her supporters have said that, you know, this is something where Attorney Biskupic was very cautious before he brought this case, and knowing the sensitive partisan nature of it, wanted to make sure that there was a case there before he brought it in court.
Yeah. But didn't you talk to Brian Blanchard? And he said he was certainly, it's whether or not he endorsed going after her, that's up open for debate still.
Yeah, yeah. Dane County District Attorney Brian Blanchard said that it's fairly common on a case like this to consult the local district attorneys. But, I mean, he didn't talk about playing a large role in the case, though. He didn't describe it as something that his office was, you know, investigating or pursuing with the fervor that the U.S. attorney was.
Yeah, so, Sean, do we know why U.S. Attorney Stephen Biskupic would be on some sort of list as to not performing up to snuff or somehow not being loyal to the Bush administration? What has he done that the Bush administration would be teed off about?
Well, the speculation, again, is that there was the Bush administration and Republicans in general were disappointed that there wasn't more action being taken against what they saw as widespread voter fraud. And so in Milwaukee, you actually had the state Republican Party say, we've got a list of people here that are clear cases of voter fraud, and they're an example of a larger problem in the state. And Attorney Biskupic investigated this and said, well, it's not, he did not come to the same conclusion, basically, that there was this widespread fraud. And so I think that, you know, that was frustrating to many Republicans. Now, the speculation is that this may have been a reason for him to be put on this chopping block. But I keep using the word speculation because that's really
that's what it is.
That's what it is at this point.
Yeah. Well, we do have Senators Herb Kohl and Russ Feingold calling for investigations, asking for documents related to the Georgia Thompson investigation. Tammy Baldwin, who we will be talking to coming up after 7:30, wanting the House to investigate the Georgia Thompson case. This state case is becoming national news.
Yeah, and you just pointed out an editorial in the New York Times today. I think that's the second one that they ran involving this case in Wisconsin. So it's certainly getting some national attention at this point. And, Feingold and Kohl were unavailable to discuss the matter this week when they sent a letter to Attorney General Gonzalez asking for more documents. But it's something that locals were more, I guess, willing to discuss. AFT Wisconsin President Andy Gussert, whose members worked alongside Georgia Thompson, praised the decision to get more information on the case.
Let's find out if there's anything there, if there's any problems, if there's anything that makes people concerned. And if not, well, then we can rest easier that the justice system's working. But right now, I think people have serious questions about why this prosecution took place. And for us, we don't want to see something like this happen again in the future.
Yeah. What does Georgia Thompson's attorney have to say about all of this?
We had a chance to talk with him. I mean, he mentioned that, just as Republicans tried to use Georgia Thompson's situation to their advantage last year, the other party's trying to do it now. Hurley said U.S. Attorney Stephen Biskupic has been a very good lawyer, and that he'd be surprised at, if politics played any role in his decision to prosecute Georgia Thompson.
And this is Georgia Thompson's attorney, Stephen Hurley.
Right.
If there's evidence, search for the evidence and let the evidence come out. But the accusations ought not be made unless there is evidence developed, because you're going to do to somebody else precisely what got done to Georgia. And that's just wrong.
Interesting take, huh?
Yeah, and I kind of had to map this out as to when all this happened, because Stephen Hurley made that comment early Thursday. Late Thursday, you have the House Judiciary Committee sending another letter to this one to the Republican National Committee, saying they've been advised that there may have been email traffic from the RNC relating to Republican Party concerns about the U.S. attorney in Milwaukee prior to the hotly contested 2006 gubernatorial election. So,
Was this the one that led to the emails being mysteriously erased? I mean, that's when that news came out.
I think that goes along with that ongoing story about these emails, these RNC emails being lost or erased. But that doesn't just involve this these questions about Georgia Thompson. The larger national story of the firings of these eight U.S. attorneys.
So what are you going to be listening for, Sean? I know you're going to be listening to the testimony of Alberto Gonzalez and the Senate Judiciary Committee questioning him when he testifies tomorrow.
Yeah, this is Senators Herb Kohl and Russ Feingold of Wisconsin sit on this committee. And just from glancing at some of Attorney General Gonzalez's prepared remarks, it doesn't look like he's going to bring this up on his own, but this is a chance for the senators, if they want to ask him some questions about this case. So it'll be up to them whether they choose this venue.
We will, by the way, be carrying that testimony live here on the Ideas Network. The Senate Judiciary Committee hearing starts at, pretty sure it's 9 o'clock our time, and is going to last all day long. There'll be some breaks here and there, a lunch break probably, but we will hear from Alberto Gonzalez and hear from Senators Cole and Feingold as they are among those questioning Alberto Gonzalez, and see if this Wisconsin case is discussed, which it could be. So you can listen to that on the Ideas Network from about 9 in the morning until maybe even as late as 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So that is here on the Ideas Network. Chapter a Day fans, I'm supposed to tell you that you can listen online to the noon chapter a day, and it's also repeated at 11 o'clock at night. Sean, there's coming up this week, the Assembly is going to be debating this photo ID bill. That also has a connection to all of this, this whole story, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, normally this would be a debate that we've heard time and time again and might not get as much attention, but I think it's an old issue that has new significance for a couple reasons. First, this probe involving U.S. attorneys nationwide and questions of whether they were put on the chopping block because they weren't being aggressive enough in voter fraud cases. And then also you had the elections board, the state elections board, announced last week that as many as 82 felons could have voted in Wisconsin in the last election. And so, you know, for the first time, you have real hard data going into this debate about how many felons potentially voted in the last election. And I think you're going to hear Republicans say that, you know, one case is too many. And you may hear Democrats say that, you know, this widespread fraud that you talked about just doesn't exist.
Yeah. And the law in Wisconsin is that a felon cannot vote if he or she is currently on parole or probation. But once the sentence has been completed, somebody with a felony conviction can vote in Wisconsin. And a lot of people say that there's just confusion over that, and that's why sometimes felons vote.
Right, right.
What else is on tap this week?
You have an assembly committee that's going to vote on that plan that would set up a statewide video franchising law to replace the city-by-city cable franchise agreements that you have right now. Of course, that's a plan that's being pushed pretty heavily by AT&T because it wants to bring its video service, basically video service over internet or phone lines, to people's houses. But consumer protection officials are saying it's a bad deal for consumer protection because it takes away all these protections that are built into existing city cable franchise agreements right now. So whether or not that gets amended, we'll find out tomorrow. I believe that's up in committee.
Well, we'll follow that and the U.S. attorney's thing. And also in our final minute, Sean, I forgot to ask you, Georgia Thompson was offered a state job back, and she did say that she's going to come back to state government employment.
Yeah, she wants to come back. It may not be the same job, but her attorney's working with the state right now and the exact particulars of, you know, how to get her back pay for the nearly a year now that she was gone. And then, you know, they're also working on the issue of, can we get attorney fees for Georgia Thompson, which is something she's not necessarily entitled to under the law, but it's something that her attorney and the state want to work toward.
All right, Sean, thanks for this week. We'll talk to you next week, I trust.
Sure. Thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, talking with us about the news from the state capitol. We'll continue and broaden out a little bit with U.S. Representative Tammy Baldwin in our second half hour of the program. We'll talk about Alberto Gonzalez's testimony tomorrow before the Senate Judiciary Committee and other issues before Congress. This is the Ideas Network. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Monday, April the 16th. Happy to welcome in U.S. Representative Tammy Baldwin for the rest of this hour. Congresswoman Baldwin was also making lots of news last week, in part for her calling for an investigation into the possible Wisconsin connection to the controversy over the firings of U.S. attorneys for what some believe were improper political reasons, not performance reasons. Were these attorneys fired because they were not aggressively pursuing cases that would hurt Democrats or help Republicans? Was there any connection to U.S. Attorney Steve Biskupic in Milwaukee? Did he feel pressure to prosecute state worker Georgia Thompson for allegedly steering a state travel contract to a contributor of Governor Doyle's? Her conviction was overturned by an appeals court recently. The judges there said there was a lack of evidence to keep her in prison. They released her from prison. We will talk with Tammy Baldwin about this story and other issues before Congress in this half hour, and we welcome your questions for her at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question for U.S. Representative Tammy Baldwin, or 263-1890-263-1890. Tammy Baldwin is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District, and she joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks a lot for being here. Now, you know, it was revealed to me anyway on late on Friday that U.S. Attorney Steve Biskupic in Milwaukee was on a list of attorneys presumably on the chopping block for not being loyal to President Bush. What was your reaction to hearing that there was a list and that Steve Biskupic was on it?
Well, this whole story, starting with the U.S. attorneys that were fired and were allegedly under political pressure to do certain things, keeps on taking new twists and turns. And of course, this list that may have been sort of the second tier or another list of possible attorneys slated for termination is going to, I think, get some additional examination. But I think one of the concerns that I have is, were partisan considerations being used either for termination or for retention? In other words, were they looking only at partisan loyalty for all of these decisions rather than the quality of the job performance? This is a public protection role, and we would hope that that would be the major focus of this administration.
Yeah, and so you called for what exactly last week in terms of an investigation?
Basically, I would like the judiciary committees of the respective houses of Congress to widen their review a little bit in order to look at this question and others that might be similar, although this one really stands out. It's so unusual to have an appellate court like the Seventh Circuit after the conclusion of oral arguments. I mean, they haven't even then reviewed the case beyond that point, ordering the release and the acquittal of somebody. And so I think that this really does draw attention just by virtue of how unique that is. Beyond that, I know that the New York Times editorialized about this case the next Monday after the release of Georgia Thompson, saying that that this was worth looking at, but that we also should be looking at the question of whether partisan political motivations is at play in a greater number of these cases.
You know, Representative Baldwin, some people might be thinking, who aren't real political junkies, that this is just politics. This is now, it was bad if this happened, but now the Dems are just trying to beat up on the Bush administration even more. Is this just politics, or is some sort of a public policy at stake here?
Well, I think this is very troubling, some of the things we've been hearing, and I think, you know, we're a country that is built on the rule of law, and these are things that we cherish and hold very dear. And so I become troubled when I see or hear about testimony where it appears that the Attorney General hasn't been comprehensive and truthful in his answers to Congress. such as when we heard his former chief of staff directly contradict him. We will hear from Attorney General Gonzalez himself tomorrow when he appears before the U.S. Senate. I'm deeply troubled by now the revelation that there are missing email records, and that the White House, I think it was late last Thursday, when they were trying to comply with requests for documents from the Congress, had to say publicly, we have been poor in our management of these, and we have a whole lot of things that are missing. And that's very disturbing and should be to U.S. citizens.
Yeah. Now, you are, I had to ask you this just before we went on the air, because you used to be, and I guess still are, on the House Judiciary Committee.
I served my first 6 years on the House Judiciary Committee before being appointed to the Energy and Commerce Committee. And just a few weeks ago, the Democrats had one vacant seat on the Judiciary Committee, and the Speaker asked if I would be willing to fill in that seat, and I am pleased to do that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your Energy Committee, this weekend in Madison, you might have even been a part of it, I'm not sure, and all over the country, cities all over the country, there were rallies to send the message to Congress to cut greenhouse gas emissions by some 80%, I think, by a certain year. Are you going to be able to cut greenhouse gas emissions in Congress this year and in subsequent years, do you think?
It's a very high priority. Yeah. Sitting on the Energy and Commerce Committee, including on its energy subcommittee, we have been taking very seriously our charge to come up with legislation by early summer this year. We will start with efficiency legislation. This is going to be a key component of our strategy, conservation and greater efficiency. And that will be our starting point. And I think that we can, I'm hopeful that we will have bold legislation that's rather aggressive and ambitious. But beyond that, there's further legislation that can be anticipated. We're going to be working very hard on creating a market-wide, what we would call carbon cap and trade piece of legislation. This is going to be very significant in scale. And so we'll need a little more time than this getting it out before early summer. But I think that too will be a very important step as we try to act responsibly as a global citizen on the issue of climate change.
Yeah. Did I read here that you're sponsoring some sort of climate change town hall meeting?
Yes. Last Thursday, we had a very successful town hall, very well attended, and the discussion was really, really helpful to me. I get a chance to see all sorts of experts who come before our committee in Washington, but I also recognize that I have some of the best experts right here in the district that I have the honor of representing. We were hearing from people whose background was in engineering, in water resources management and limnology, in other environmental studies, and it was a fascinating discussion. But we do, you know, I'm one who thinks that the science is just completely clear on this, and it's not a question of if there's global warming, it's what are we going to do about it. And I think that citizen responsibility is a key component of this. This isn't all about government policy. It's each person asking of themselves, how can I reduce my carbon footprint on this world?
We're going to check our weather forecast and then to phone calls for Tammy Baldwin, U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 8, we're going to talk about a history of collective joy. the new book by Barbara Ehrenreich, Dancing in the Streets, wondering why we have lost group celebrations and group festivals and how we might keep them from disappearing. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking with Tammy Baldwin during this hour. She is the U.S. representative representing Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District, and we welcome your calls for her at 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890. Before we go to the phones, Representative Baldwin, I know that you're on your way back to Washington later today. You're done with your spring break. The Senate is already back. I saw that President Bush is now going to really turn up the heat, asking Congress to send him a bill that he can sign that funds the troops in Iraq without any conditions or timetables. Is the president going to get such a bill?
Well, certainly not as a starting point. And I would maintain that there's no reason why he can't sign the bill that we're prepared to send him. This president has just not taken counsel from, you know, the experts like the Iraq Study Group, and certainly is turning a deaf ear to the voters of last November. I really think this is the way to act responsibly with regard to Iraq, and hope that the president will sign what we send him.
Yeah. Are you prepared, Representative Baldwin, to defund entirely of the war effort in Iraq?
Well, I certainly think that if this president will have to talk to Congress, will have to listen to Congress around the funding issue. That is the power that Congress has to influence such things, the power of the purse strings. We know that that we have previously passed a non-binding resolution expressing our disagreement with the troop escalation, the war escalation that the president called for earlier this year, to no avail. I think that the only way to get this president to actually engage in dialogue and compromise is when Congress does exercise its authority over the purse strings.
Well, you and the president aren't on odds over everything. He's going to sign a bill that you authored later this week. Tell us about that.
Yes, indeed. On Friday, we expect a signing ceremony at the White House for our reauthorization of the National Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program. This is a vital program in terms of saving lives, because we know that when you can detect certain cancers in early stages, the chances of beating back that cancer are greatly enhanced. This program is specifically focused on uninsured, low-income women who are far more likely to forego routine screening because of the expense involved. And this program does outreach and tries to make sure that they have access to screening services.
Well, now let's take calls for you. Our lines are full, and Steve in Middleton is first. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm a councilman in Middleton City Council. But among other things, what I guess I'd like to talk about is I was laid off not once but twice in the early 2000s, right around the turn of the century when the tech economy basically melted down. I had spoken with a congresswoman, I guess it must have been around 2000, and she had just come to address a bunch of us. And afterwards, I had talked to her about her support for the expansion of the number of H-1B visas. Now, these visas allow foreign workers, typically from China and India, to come to the United States and work in technical jobs. Now, I'm almost 50 years old, and, you know, this last time around, I found, I think, a lot of job or age discrimination in the course of my job search. Now, at the time, as I had mentioned, the congresswoman seemed to be extremely supportive of expanding the number of H-1B visas at the time, and when I pointed out to her the difficulty some of us were having in finding jobs, you know, we're American citizens and all, she told me, well, just take a look at, like, Sonic Foundry and just, you know, how the tech economy is booming and everything, and if we don't let these people in, the jobs are going to be going overseas. Well, in the years since, the jobs have been going overseas anyway. And if we're bringing in foreign workers to take jobs to work in America, where is the benefit for, you know, those of us who are, you know, born here? So I guess what I'm asking the congresswoman is, has there been any evolution in her thinking on this particular subject in the intervening years? And does she plan on supporting the recent legislation targeted towards expanding the number of H-1B visas?
Well, you bring up a wide range of issues, and you're not the first person who has discussed with me the issue of age discrimination and the trouble that individuals who have had, you know, layoffs or terminations for whatever set of reasons later in life, when you know, those difficulties can be greater than younger people entering the workforce. And I've seen that over and over again, but I don't necessarily look at it as connected as much as you seem to the whole issue of immigration and temporary work permits and those programs and what level they should be authorized at. And I would certainly... what I would like to see is the most vibrant economy that we can sustain in the United States so that any qualified U.S. worker can have a job. But if having the most vibrant economy also includes a complement of that workforce that is, from overseas, I want to hit the healthy balance that helps us move forward as best we can. But I will certainly fight for U.S. jobs. I think that's the central part of it. That's why we even would have or entertain the idea of bringing in foreign workers is to have a stronger economy.
Thanks, Steve. We're going to go next to Harv in Washburn. Hi, Harv.
Hi. My question is, given that there are 8 or 9 joint resolutions from various state legislatures that have been sent to the House asking for the impeachment of George Bush, and Wisconsin is probably going to be the 9th or 10th if Frank Boyle's resolution passes, how come we can't get the Congress to entertain a resolution for impeachment? We just have done with all this crap.
Oh, baloney. Representative Baldwin, is there any chance impeachment will be put back on the table?
Well, I think that you see a number of investigations unfolding right as we speak. We started out talking about one of them that looks into the activities of this administration. And I think that to start with the idea of impeachment probably prejudges the information that's going to be revealed in the course of these investigations. But I think that as they move ahead, depending on what we find out, the consequences should follow. That said, I last session was co-signed a resolution of inquiry that looked into activities of this administration with regard to the buildup to the Iraq War, in particular with regard to whether or not this administration followed the Geneva Conventions, whether they authorized the use of torture, etc. When we were hearing these incredibly disturbing stories, I would like to see Congress play a stronger role in looking into these questions than it has so far, and I hope that that will still be a possibility as we progress through this session.
Thank you, Har, for the call. Robin in Moose Lake is with us now. Good morning.
Thank you. Hello, Congressman Baldwin.
Yeah, Congresswoman would be nice, too. That's all right.
That's all right. Either one.
Congresswoman, I'm a little bit old school. Sorry about that. My comment and question is, we got a legislation coming through the House on the hate crimes bill, and you talked about what's near and dear to Americans. And what's near and dear to this American and millions of Americans is our right to free speech. And if the current legislation for the hate crimes passes as it's set up, my understanding is that it will make it a crime for millions of Americans who are in their churches, their temples, their synagogues, or other places of worship and other public places to speak of immorality or those who promote immorality. And it will be telling for those who vote in favor of the current hate crimes bill, it will be telling on what they hold near or dear to their heart, whether it's, free speech or not. And I'd be curious to know what your feelings are on the hate crimes bill and whether you're in favor of it or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. I'm strongly in favor of it, and it sounds like you've been misinformed about the content of the hate crimes bill. We will be having a hearing on it, actually, this week. But in order for, under the terms of this hate crimes bill, for anything to be considered a hate crime, it has to start with a violent crime. So that right there is far different than a matter of what somebody's thinking or saying. A violent crime has to be committed in order for you to even get to the question of whether that violent crime was a hate crime or not. In addition, we currently have federal hate crimes laws. They protect people on the basis of race and religion and ethnicity. And so this would add sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender and disability to those hate crime statutes that already exist. They have stood the test of time. They have withstood appeal on constitutional grounds. No court has ever found that they violate free speech. And I don't believe adding a couple additional categories will change that in any way.
Well, we're already out of time. So thank you so much for being with us. And maybe we'll talk more about that hate crimes bill in the future. Thanks
Very
a lot
good.
For
thank
being
you.
With us. Tammy Baldwin, U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District. We thank her for joining us. We thank Karen Prager for producing the hour and for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.